What's up, party people and place to be? It's time for another episode of GM Workshop, where we tell you about running a game and things like that, as well as just general tips and tricks for more fun tabletop. It's me, your host. It's just me. I'm gonna stop doing this voice.
See, I was trying to find an opening to do some burr, burr, burr party noises, but you didn't give me one. So.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't give you one.
Yeah, and I'm Tad from Let Me Tell You About.
This is brought on because we got a very interesting question in the mail. And Tad, can you tell them where they can send these questions in the mail?
Yes, we received this question through the email, which is Let Me Tell You About at gmail.com. That's Let Me Tell You About with three T's, or through the Twitter, or through the Discord.
Yes,
it was one of the three. I don't remember because this was actually kind of a while ago.
Yeah, this we were planning on doing a just general episode on answering viewer questions, but this one confused us to the point where I think it'll be very good to go through this and then also kind of segue into what this means for how you can build and run a successful game.
Yes.
So, first up, this is from. I believe the only name that they gave is Dino, but we don't...
Fan of the show, Dino.
Yes.
I fell for hours in the dinosaur world.
Oh my god, please don't. But...
Mario, it's a revival question.
I fell for hours in Dino's homebrewed world.
We're just gonna go through the question, and try not to go off on any tangents, but... So, it starts off with... Hi there, Tad, Alex, everybody else, blah, blah, blah. About to work on my homebrew Pathfinder campaign. Got the impulse to send you guys, blah, blah, blah. Love the podcast. Thank you. And then, you know,
one
more
tangent.
Backstory, more backstory.
One tangent.
What?
What the fuck does Alex have to do with revival?
It said from Let Me Tell You About,
and
revival.
Thank
Come
you
on, very
man.
Much.
Okay, I'm just saying. Stay in your lane, Alex.
Don't cross the podcast streams.
Okay, so, Revival is a really great campaign, by the way. Who wrote it? Actually, would not be too shocked to find out it's mostly improv. It is. As mentioned earlier, I'm working on a campaign of my own. I was hoping maybe I could get some advice on it. Before then, here's a little summary of it. If you're interested, I can send you what I've got so far. It gives a backstory. I suppose I should ask questions now. Five paragraphs in. So, when writing a campaign for a tabletop setting, how important would you say it is to format your writing to how actual publishers would format their official content? Think Wizards of the Coast or Paizo. Should there be suggested dialogue written into scripted events? I've always done that since I do at some point intend to release my content online, even if no one reads it. What are some creative ways to give players XP outside of combat? When making a homebrew setting, how important is it to stick to the world lore and setting of the game you're writing for? For example, my campaign takes place on the plane of the original Pathfinder setting, Galorian, during the Middle Age of the Age of Lost Omens, which is a canonical period and the location of Pathfinder's official modules and campaigns. And finally, what to do if somebody absolutely breaks your script? I've been able to account for most scenarios, but when designing any game, video game, or tabletop, players can do stuff that's really unexpected. I know this is a really long-winded email, and I appreciate that you've taken the time to read everything. Yada yada. Hope there's more episodes to come. There will be. So, when we first read this, we read it together because we were going to do a question and answer little episode, and we were very confused.
It was really firing my neurons trying
this
to puzzle
took
this
us
one
a
out.
While to parse. So let's just go from the top. And, you know, first off, let's just go through this hop and answer the questions because they're actually pretty interesting.
Well, no, I mean, the first thing that tipped us off to like, huh, was Revival is a really great campaign, by the way. Who wrote it?
Yes. So this that's what I meant by go from the top. But
I thought you were going to go with just the questions like 1, 2, 3.
No. That is a question.
I mean, that is a clip. It's not in one of the formatted questions.
Right.
I'm
so,
questioning your motives and how you're going to go over these questions.
Yes. So this is something that I've noticed a lot in certain DMs. The concept of writing a campaign, right? And that is the most pretentious sounding thing I've ever said on this so far.
We're just getting worked up, baby.
Would not be too shocked to find out it's mostly improv. The secret to that is it is entirely improv. The only things that I, as the DM, bring to the table, right? I bring characters and I bring world setting. That's it. Right?
There's no way you can account for all of the dumb shit that I'll probably do.
Right. And by the world, I mean just the motivations of characters in the background, of like things that are happening that are going to happen no matter what you guys do, just like because some guy over somewhere is doing something, right? Somebody you have absolutely no interaction with. You know, stuff like that. As the only, like, written things that I do are scenes, right? Where, I believe you talked about this before, but it's just, the concept is you don't write something like a book. You write it, if you're going to write content for your game, I found that it works a lot better to have your story be flexible, to have any amount of information that you want to have delivered to the players, no matter what, be delivered in the form of a versatile and alterable scene.
Yes.
Like, for example, a good example of this is the players never had to meet Casey and the Steel Trackers. If they didn't want to, they didn't have to. They could have gone this entire like campaign that we've been playing without ever meeting them. If they never made decisions that led towards them meeting them, they would have never met them. However, when they decide to go meet them, that's when the scene of they meet the Steel Drivers happens, which would happen more or less the same, you know, with the things that Casey says, the way that he says them, yada, yada. Right? Like, that's a scene.
So for those scenes, did you have, as you're asking, did you write out all of Casey's dialogue?
Hell no. I just had an idea of what the character was like. And then just worked it into the description, right?
Well, I think that fundamentally, based on some of where these other questions come from, like, I think that maybe this is recent, and I don't know how old this person is, but it seems to me that, like, in a lot of people who are just picking up D&D and picking up tabletops, they're coming at it from this point of view of, like scripted events, dialogue options, or things like that. But it's like there's a strong delineation between a game of D&D and a video game. Like, video game RPGs originally existed as like
a means to emulate the experience.
Yeah, an RPG is an emulation of what D&D allows you to do. By looking at D&D like to try and emulate a video game, you're working in this weird recursive circle where you lose a lot of what makes D&D and role-playing games so good. It boxes yourself into a corner.
Right. Based on... The thing is that I've seen this in a lot of people who are very new to tabletop games and a lot of people who are very old school, right?
Yeah.
It tends to be some one of those two. You're either very new to them or you're very, very entrenched.
Yes.
Right?
There's some people, like there was, I've seen exposure of both people who are super, super new. Tim, who plays John, was playing in a game recently where people came to the table and just kind of assumed that it played out like an Elder Scrolls RPG where they would just follow and not really try to do anything that wasn't like, in their case, it was more the DM was just kind of leading them in one exact direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
and that's kind of.
I think we've talked about not putting people on like not railroading your party, but this is different than not railroading your party. This is railroading yourself.
Yeah, this is having a story and then using your players as a vehicle to tell the story. So this is legitimate if you tell your players about it in advance, but. So we'll get to that more from the other questions, but the thing that I wanted to say with the writing thing is it is not pre-written. The only things that I have pre-written, are incredibly long-term things, like, you know, characters' motivations way down the line, right? Why is this character doing a thing? Well, it's because he wants to do this. And then very small scenes. Everything else is reacting to what the players want to do and actions that the players take.
Yeah.
So, onto the first question. When writing a campaign for a tabletop setting, how important would you say it is to format your writing to how actual publishers would format their official content? Not at all. If it helps you to write out, like, your campaign story arc, that, you know, the events that you want to have happen, right? Like, because that's totally fine to have a, like, you know, details about the big bad guy and write it out like a publisher would write it out, then sure. If that helps you remember their motivations and everything, go for it. But the reason why publishers like Wizards of the Coast and Paizo write out those adventure guides in these very restrictive ways is because they are things that you are supposed to be able to run even if you're very, very new to DMing.
Yeah.
They're things that are meant to be run by anybody, which means they're going to be things that do not leave much wiggle room. They're going to be things that really assume that you guys are sitting down and you're saying, this is what we're playing today, right?
Yeah, module gaming is very, very different than a freeform game of D&D. And that's by design, because modules like, I think there's like the Dark Sun setting is a really popular one.
Well, yeah, there's, like, adventures within the Dark Sun setting. If it's Shadowrun, there's On the Run.
Yeah.
Which is a very popular run. There's things like that where you've got these pre-written stories. And I've actually run modules before. I've run On the Run for beginner Shadowrun players. Of course, however, the big secret that I did there, you know, the little side thing is I changed it so that it could lead into something else, right?
Yeah.
I changed it as they were going and reacting so that it led into an actual story afterwards.
Right.
Right.
So I think the key here is that, like, if formatting is something that really helps you with your writing, try and maybe shift to, like, more of an if-then statement kind of flowchart. Like,
right.
Instead of saying, this is what will happen, here's in the third age, here's how this plays out, and here's the next thing, and when, instead of saying, when the party does this, write, if the party does this.
Right, and the thing that you'll quickly find, if you end up doing that, is it gets hard.
It becomes
this sprawling decision tree, and you're not going to be able to write enough options. If you really sit down and do that, you will literally be there forever because you can't account for every single decision that they could possibly make.
Which is sort of...
Yeah, you can't account for Patton thinking, oh man, I want to drive a race car, when your original idea was, well, okay, no, there's just a thing over here.
I accounted for that. Like, I knew that it was a possibility. I thought it was one that you guys weren't going to take, but I knew it was a possibility. But the thing is that I didn't have a script written where I said, okay, then they're not going to do this, and then blah, blah, blah. I wasn't thrown off guard. Which leads into, should there be suggested dialogue written into scripted events? This is the one where I will say absolutely 100% no.
Yeah, no.
If you're doing this, then I think you're really absolutely losing the appeal of tabletops. For me, if this happened in a game where I was playing, right, where you sit down and you go, you guys are all in front of the king, and, like, the king says there's a magical sword that only the hero with the hero's blood, which you all have, can wield, and it's down in a cave, and then the DM goes, like, hands you some dialogue that you could say.
That would set off
so many warning signs for me.
I'm not sure that he's saying that he's actually going to give these to players, but I think he's saying, like, here's some suggested dialogue options for people reading it online. I think this guy's really interested in publishing, but I'm not sure what purpose the suggested dialogue options serve other than maybe if you rephrase it as examples of what players might say, but I don't think
that that's the...
Because it says suggested dialogue.
It looks to me like he's talking about players meet the king. This is what I should prepare for myself in advance, what the king should say. Like, little bullet points of saying, like three kings, tomb of the fallen, get that shit.
Well,
just for him to remember when he gets there?
Yeah, the problem that I have with that is this then leads the players into feeling, especially if you just jump off the cuff into this clearly scripted dialogue, that this character is an NPC, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really breaks the illusion. If your main goal is to write a book and have a D&D game second, then sure, go ahead and write out the dialogue. However, when you're actually playing the game, if you want your dialogue to flow naturally, and if you want your players to actually get invested into characters, you're never going to be able to write better dialogue than you can come up with on the spot via actually understanding the character that you're role-playing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, unless you're just monologuing at yourself, right? If you're just never letting the players talk, then sure, you can do that. But at some point, you know, in that scripted dialogue, the rogue is going to say, like, you, like, you know, going back to the whole thing, you're going to be like, hero's blood. I was born in a sewer, and here's all my backstory, and I had to stab people to live. If I had the hero's blood, don't you think, like, you guys would have been looking out for me a little bit more? What's up with that? I want answers. And if you had written out all this stuff, you aren't going to have an answer. Like, then what's the king going to say? You didn't account for that. And so I found so many times that writing things out ends up hurting your ability to improvise. And improvising is the name of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, in my experience, the hardest that role-playing is ever going to get in one of these games is when you have to role-play two NPCs talking to each other.
Oh god, I hate it.
Which it's really tough, but sometimes it's unavoidable and it happens.
It just feels bad.
Yeah, you're kind of like talking to yourself twice.
You just try and not do it because it just feels awkward. It's not particularly like, it's not hard in like a, oh man, it's difficult to jump between two characters. It's hard in a, like, I'm getting weird looks from across the table.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot, like, in a lot of, the stuff that he sent for his setting, I don't think he probably wants all of it revealed, but there's... There's stuff that says, this happens to them. This is what they do next. Then they do this. Like, to me, it seems like the players, when they get put into this setting, are just... They're not playing. They're...
Right.
It's like you're a character in a book.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'll just change details, right?
Yeah.
So as to not actually spoil the story. It's like, they're in a caravan that gets attacked, and then with the help of somebody, they survive, and then they come onto a new world, and then they seek some artifact. But it's, what happens if they just choose to not?
Yeah, what if they don't?
What happens if they show up in this new area, like this new huge city or whatever, and they just decide, cool, I want to go explore it? What happens if they decide, I want to go back home?
What happens if when the caravan gets attacked, they do really well and they manage to fight everybody off?
Or what happens if they decide to turncoat and join up with the things that are attacking the caravan?
Yeah, like, the thing is
like, that would be a little...
When you write scenarios that only have one ending, it becomes really, really obvious to the characters that this is the only ending that's available. Like, you know those supposed to lose boss fights in a video game?
Yeah.
Do you remember how you would fight really, really hard and you would try to do your best and then the boss would do like a full heal move And you'd be like, oh, I guess I'm just supposed to die. And then you let yourself die, and you're like, well, that wasn't that fun.
Right. This was something that served to facilitate the story, and my actions as a player didn't matter.
Quick aside, that's why, like, Demon's Souls and Dark Souls are so cool.
Right. No, I was about to bring that up, because it's like, you fight the thing that you're, like, this is a supposed to lose fight. There's no way I can beat this thing, but you totally just can't. So, but the thing about this, and about the whole written scenarios, is it brings up a very, very interesting problem that really is what a lot of GMs run into that causes players to lash out, which is lack of player agency.
Yeah.
You see this in the behavior of, like, when you're raising children, in, like, pets and things, but when you restrict somebody or some things options and remove power and agency from them, they lash out. Right? Like, if you shove your players into a situation where you're like, you know, they go in front of the king and the king's like, you have all been cursed. The only way that you can survive is to hunt down this gem that will reverse the process. And by the way, here's two of my super cool NPCs that are going to accompany you on the way. They're plot important, by the way. And I'm going to spend a long time describing them, and they're super cool, and they have all this backstory, and then the NPCs go, we must venture out to the cave of whatever the fuck, and then go hunt down the gem. Your players are going to say, all right, I'm going to stab this guy.
Yeah, stab him in his sleep.
Yeah, your players are going to go, we're being set up, we're going to stab him in their sleep, and we're going to run. Right? Like, there's the whole gem thing, it's a setup. We can get it ourselves. We don't want to be tied down to this bastard king. They're going to revolt. Because they don't, even if they don't, like, actively acknowledge it and aren't thinking about it, when you have no power in a situation, you try and get some.
Yeah, and the thing is that the whole point of D&D, in my opinion anyway, was to facilitate, like, maybe it's really, like, super nerdy, but originally, like, what is the point of a role-playing game? Who are the people who played these things first? They were nerds, right? And this was...
Yeah.
Role-playing games were originally a way to facilitate power and, like, control to people who had very little. Like,
yeah,
you know, these were games that it's pure escapism, right? So you're going from a situation, maybe you were bullied in high school. It's, like, really stereotypical, but this is true for a lot of people who played D&D. And you can read about stories where people, like, you know, I had a really rough childhood, but playing D&D made me feel... like, strong. Like, when I had this character and I had them complete these tasks, I felt good because I accomplished something. I did it. So, like, this idea that you give your players the power to accomplish themselves is really a core tenet to what makes D&D so...
Yeah, you put players in a world, you let them make any character that they want.
Yeah.
They can make any character that they want. They can make their dream self. They can make an interesting character that they've been thinking about. They can do whatever. And then they have absolute agency and control to affect this world. They aren't tied down by anything if they don't want to be.
Exactly.
Right? Like, when you make your character, you're not tied down by anything if you don't want to be.
And so
you can make a super powerful, badass guy, like, badass barbarian who's, like, carries a huge ass sword and can do anything and blah blah blah. You can do whatever, and that's the appeal, is that you put them in this world and you have them, you know, act out these stories that are just fun and interesting to you.
And I think that where a lot of this problem comes from is the DM is trying to do the same thing. They want the DM wants to feel powerful too, and unfortunately, I think a lot of times the DM feels powerful by controlling the players when really the DM, in my opinion, should feel powerful by supporting the players.
Right. It's a cooperative thing. The DM's source of enjoyment, ideally, should come from making the players have fun.
Yeah, I think it's really... I think it for me, it's really disheartening when I see a lot of DM messages and stuff online talking about, like, oh, I can't wait till I throw... I throw this big monster that's totally going to kill my players, or like this problem player's been doing XY thing. I'm going to punish them. It's like, yeah, throwing big monsters and stuff at your players is fun, but it's fun to watch them beat them. It's not fun to watch them get beat.
That the other thing, though, is that we've gotten this a couple of times where people have been like, oh, yeah, I've got these problem players, so I'm going to throw this crazy thing at them. You're rewarding them. You're giving them something cool to do. You can't punish the players with playing the game.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing is that it really is this very delicate tug-of-war power dynamic thing where the DM wants to have agency by being able to control the world that they've built, right? Or if they're using a module, by being able to tell their own stories within that world, or, you know, to decide how the story gets played out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the players want to be able to control how their characters react to that world.
I think the best way for a DM to exercise their agency and their power is by making the world as vibrant as possible. Like, you can surprise your players with how well the world reacts to their actions. Like, you don't have to try and make the players' actions fit the world. Like, if you say, oh, that doesn't work, oh, it doesn't make sense, you don't have if they to, do that. You don't
have to write a cool story.
Yeah. You can surprise your players by, when they do something they think is going to throw you for a loop, by just rolling with it. And they'll freak out that, like, what, that thing that I did that was totally off the cuff and I thought wasn't going to work actually worked? Oh, that thing that we did 3 sessions ago is coming back now?
Oh, Guy Humano landing a crit and disguising as a zombie on the roof actually worked? All right, let's keep going.
Right. Like, that was an example. Okay, so this is a good example. This was when I was more new to running games. We were running a game, and I had a plan because we were introducing a new player into our session, which was Tim, who plays John. That was the first time we were playing with him, and his character, the way that I had written him to show up, was the players were going to get rolled by this really hard combat. I had it was a very incredibly slim chance of them actually succeeding. I had an out for if they succeeded, but it wasn't as good.
Yeah.
And then they were going to get captured by some crazy cultists, taken to the basement of this facility thing. And then that's where Tim's character would shine, because, you know, he was this cool, you know, insect dude seeker, and he had all this stealth and was going to hop in, hop, 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 you know, jump through the buildings and save the guys, right? Like, that was his introduction. But Tad, playing a changeling sorcerer, completely threw that for a loop.
Excuse me, it was a human sorcerer.
Guy Humano. The most human. He threw that for a loop, because during combat, he ran off, made a stealth check to hide, and then makes a bluff check to disguise himself as one of the zombie things that was attacking the group. And I go, well, shit. Like, that's a really good idea. That's smart. And then the story changed around that. Like, I didn't continue with my plan. My plan fell apart, and in a good way. That's the thing, is that so many times with people who write out their stories, who write campaigns, who write villains, and things like that need to be there for the game to work, they come to us and say, like, oh man, my players are ruining the game. They stabbed this really important NPC, or they, like, went off the rails. They fucked up my game. They're acting out. They're problem players, blah, blah, blah. Most of the time it's them, one, trying to get some sort of control over the situation, and two, I look at the things that their players have done and say, you could turn this into something better than what you wrote. And that's the big secret, is, like, Revival is a really great campaign. Who wrote it? The players.
Yeah, like, I mean, if my favorite character in the whole game is Specky, and Specky was seriously, like, I think 2 seconds away from getting basically incinerated when we did this offset. I think it was off screen.
Yeah.
The off screen meeting between Elias and Specky was, like, probably about 2 seconds away from getting incinerated. The whole Elias gets a cat, a stone monster fungus cat, was not written. That was completely off the cuff.
Yeah, the only thing that I had written with that was that, like, you guys were going to meet the golem thing, and if you made friends with it, it was going to give you something. And then I was like, well, it makes sense. Something that Elias would like, cat, boom. And then Elias's first reaction was, okay, I'm going to dissect it. And I went, okay, let's go through that scene. Let's not do it on camera because it's just going to be the two of us. And it's going to be a bunch of like really obnoxiously in-depth biology shit.
Bunch of nerds.
Which everyone is like, oh, you gotta record that next time. They're like, we didn't know. Like, you know, people are interested in that? Okay.
Right. But if Elias had chosen to, he totally could have just killed and dissected the Speccy to see what the way the fungus thing works. Could have chosen to do that. Nothing, like, the game would be very different, but my story wouldn't break because I didn't build overarching plot themes around small decisions that the players can make, around removing agency from the players.
You didn't have an idea of, like, the goal, like, Golem gives them X reward, seven sessions from now, this thing's going to have a gem in it that they're going to need to put into the stone door to get inside of this place.
Well, like, even that, we could have totally fought the Golem, or I could have fucked up when we were trying to communicate with it.
100%. I had the thing statted up. I was like, if you guys had chosen to attack it, shit would have happened. Completely different.
Ooh, that would have been fun. I could already think of all the wacky names that would come up with for bombs to dig in there and have them explode and send rocks flying at us.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
except those rocks would have exploded into, like, fungus elements. Leeches.
The story and plot elements that I have,
I'll be fine.
The story and plot elements that I've had written for this session, for this campaign, are hooks, and they're everywhere. Like, there's a bunch of different stories and things that you guys could have gone down that I just have, you know, a short little blurb written about. This is an overarching thing that could happen, right?
Yeah, you got to think about, like, that SpongeBob episode where with all the hooks. I think it's called The Hooks.
Yeah.
And does this look dangerous to you? And that's Patrick holding on to several overarching ones that are very flimsy and anyone could have grabbed
you
those.
You dangle a whole bunch of shiny little hooks in front of your players and you wait for them to grab one. You wait for them to grab the one they like.
Or they could make their own.
Or they stumble into a hook.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to remain flexible for this. Like, so many times in Revival, even, the players have been the ones who have supplied the hooks. And that's really the thing, is when you try and write all of this, you're losing out on the processing power that you can offload to your players.
Yeah.
You don't need to write every single detail about the world. You don't need to write every single detail about the plot, because you can let the players do that.
We already mention how the Tenali thing went down?
What do you mean?
I made a roll and the way I described it caused you to go, oh shit. Or the Jerry drinking thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, for example, that whole internal scene with Jiron fighting against his own internal monologue was completely off the cuff and brought on by John offhandedly giving Jiron the strongest drink in the known universe. And then Jiron deciding to give it to a physical manifestation of his warlock pack that is also bound to his soul. You're getting soul drunk there, my dude. And so I was like, wait, shit, that's going to fuck everything up for him. I went, oh, that's interesting. And then, boom, the session that I had planned, out the window. We're doing this now.
And it ended up being really cool.
It was better than the session that I had written. Because I just let the players write one. All I did was react.
You can't do that. The Fine Bros have it copyrighted.
Oh, that's an ancient reference.
That's the real thing here. That's why this guy's asking these questions. He knows you can't just react to the players because you'll get fucking sued.
You'll get
sued. DMs react. Can't monetize that on YouTube.
So,
I think that brings us to question 4.
There's tons of examples. Yeah. Yes. What are some creative ways to get players XP outside of combat?
You can't. Unless it's written in the rules. No, you can.
Nah, I mean, you can give RP XP. It's written into the rules, but I mean, as well, in really in any game, you can do whatever you want as long as you know that when you stray away from the real rules, you're going to end up making things probably slightly imbalanced.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is if you start moving away from the balance as written, you'll start getting really, really weird, wonky characters. Like, if you hand out too much XP for RP, you'll notice characters start to progress quicker than the story is, like, allowing them to.
Yeah. Okay, next one. When making a homebrew setting, how important is it to stick to the world lore and setting of the game you're writing for? And he's talking about, like, if you're writing in an established universe.
But
and
see,
the
that...
answer is, as much as your players give a shit.
But the thing is, to me, is that's such a strange question, because when you say...
homebrew setting, that kind of...
No. Stick to the world lore and setting. How would you... In my experience, how would you not stick to the setting and lore?
What he's talking about is he or she is talking about, like, their campaign takes place in the plane of the original Pathfinder setting, they said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't really a homebrew setting. It's a homebrew campaign, right? And there's a difference. The setting is the world. The setting is the backdrop. And if you're making your own, make your own. You don't need to rely on that sort of thing. But if you're going to rely on that, the answer to how important it is to stick to the world lore is not at all, as long as your players also know that, right?
Well, but
you can play Shadowrun in the Shadowrun universe and then just change everything. You can be like, oh yeah, okay guys, we're going to play Shadowrun. In this universe, Dunkelzahn doesn't exist. The megacorps are completely different. They're all of mine. Here you go. Otherwise, it's general Shadowrun.
I guess for
and then
me,
your players go,
I can see the wall of, like, I want to run a game, but I don't want to have to create, you know, work and come up with all this super creative, you know, deepest lore world build stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to go with default D&D plane, but there's some things in this thing I don't like. You can change that.
You know? Can just change
if
it.
If in your D&D world, drow live on the surface, whatever.
Fuck it. Whatever. Yeah,
whatever.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Unless your players are, like, hardcore into it. And even then, you could just be like, hey, guys, in this world, you know, like some people think of goblins as tinkerer,
oh,
masterminds, little scamps.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm bringing it up again. But in Revival, they're just little shitlords, which is fine. That's an equally valid interpretation of goblins.
How many times have we fucking quoted Max Landis in this? Because, again, how do you kill a vampire?
The answer is any way you want, because
vampires don't exist.
Yet.
Cool. I mean, we've said it before, but it's a really fucking good point. If you say, hey, these are vampires, and your players are like, I'm gonna get a wooden stake, you can totally say, nah, vampires don't work that way.
But at the same time, this is why it's important to have dialogue with your players and understand where they're coming from. Because if you just say, okay, there's a vampire, your players are going to draw on their knowledge of what a vampire is. And they're going to go, okay, we need some holy water, we need some crosses, we need some wooden stakes. And then if they try that on the vampire and it doesn't work, because you're like, stupid, in my setting, you have to kill a vampire with really hot chili peppers, your players are going to call bullshit.
Yes. Well, see, that's why I thought this question was kind of weird, is because when somebody says homebrew, I immediately think, oh, you made up the entire thing yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, you can steal from whatever the fuck you want. Like, who cares?
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter.
You can take bits and pieces from whatever. If you want to be like, okay, we're on this homebrew plane, we're in New York City, but, and then the Riders of Rohan show up. Whatever, cool, rad, I don't give a shit.
They're the Riders of Rohan, but they're on motorcycles.
And they're wearing Timbs.
Kick ass. Well, I mean, even Revival is that way. We borrow a lot from the regular D&D pantheon of gods?
Yeah, I used the 4E pantheon, basically, just as shorthand, because it's easier than coming up with your own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and some stuff doesn't fit in the, like, the Patton's Bird Race. They aren't technically, I mean, Kenku kind of exists, but
yeah,
he's
but
not,
I didn't
want
to use the, I didn't want to use the lore and rules for Kenku because it's kind of annoying and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So you can just choose to not use it. So next thing, what to do if somebody absolutely breaks your script? Nothing. You change it.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to get an answer for, like, how do I get back on script? The answer is you don't. The answer is your script has now changed.
Yeah, you're not writing the script.
Probably for the better. Yeah, you shouldn't be writing the script, I don't think. Like, if you're... Here's a very good example from a game that I played in, which was at one point we were on a boat, right? And we were sailing back to our continent after going to go meet with some guys to talk about building an army to go fight some demigods, right? And on the way back, we get stuck in this huge storm and the mast to our ship falls over, right? And we're drifting out at sea aimlessly. And then our ranger buddy goes, wait a second, I got these seed bullets from some guy. I'm going to put them into my flintlock and I'm going to shoot it down into the mast. And these things grow trees wherever they're planted in anything, right? They're magic. And so he goes, I'm going to grow us a new mast. And we go, that's fucking rad. Hell yeah. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to grow the tree. It's going to magically grow really fast. We're going to like build it into a mast and everything. And the DM just said, no, it doesn't. Like, yeah, you get a mast, but you're still drifting and you can't really control the boat. We're like, what? But we came up with this really cool idea. But we have a mast now. We can go sail back to the port that we wanted to go to. He's like, no, you guys are still crashing. And the entire reason for that is that he had a plot for the session, which was we were going to crash land on a beach and we were going to meet some elves and we were going to like get introduced to the ranger's backstory. Right? Because it was going to be, he was an elf and these were like his home tribe and whatever, and it was going to be his time to shine. But when we fix that mess, that should change things. That, like, the script, he just plowed right on with the script.
Like, when as you were describing it, I was thinking like, okay, let's say, and my idea for this session is they're in a storm, they lose their mast, and there's pirates coming up. And then, you know, okay, we're going to have this cool pirate battle. Oh, they fixed their mast? Oh, shit, we're doing naval combat now. You guys man your cannons. Let's do this shit.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Change it like something. That. This is a way better
change
idea.
Something. Change something. And
a lot of this comes from, like, well, how the fuck am I supposed to prepare for a session then?
Right. And the way that you do that is a little secret that you can use is... You don't have to have your results come from a set path to that result. Mm-hmm. For example, if he really wanted us to meet this elven tribe, right? Which he really did. We don't have to meet them in the forest, right?
Maybe there's a stray elven ship out at sea that has lost their mast and is like drifting around.
Yeah, like if when we fix our mast and we go, okay, we're going to go back to our port, have something else happen that leads us to find them. You can have the exact same thing happen where we end up meeting these elves. We go to their forest. We talk to them. We meet the ranger's dad, et cetera, right? You can have all of that happen. We could land at the port and those guys could just be there, right?
Yeah.
And then have that scene happen because they're like, oh, we came because... You know, we heard you were doing blah, 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 blah. And like, I wanted to see so-and-so again. And you can change things like that. You
or
don't
we
have
felt
to have
the power of the forest out at sea when you grew that tree.
Yeah. Like we felt some sort of like, you know, you look at the mast and you go, that's like an elven, you know, that's an elven tree. And anywhere that has an elven tree is elven property. So we're seizing your ship now because you have, you know, against the laws of nature, used our magical trees, and
this
now it's elven property.
This is some Dwarf Fortress shit, dude. Don't even lie.
Well, no, that's how he had written the elves, though. They were like these xenophobic territorial assholes.
Oh, I was going to say, like, you have to stop cutting down trees. How many... We will allow you to cut down zero trees. I'm going to cut down 20. Also, this is a drawbridge trap. Say your prayers, fucko.
Exactly. But that's kind of what he was going for, but... that's the secret, is that you can have, when your players break the script, all it means is that your script wasn't good.
Yeah.
Like,
or not even that it wasn't good. You could have a fantastically written book, but that doesn't mean that your player characters care.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't. And also the other thing is that a lot of times when this happens, you're like, why didn't they do it? It was so obvious. I can't believe they didn't think of this, but it was obvious to you because you thought of it. Maybe the player characters thought of something completely different.
Yeah. Like in the very same game that we had this, you know, NPC that ended up coming with us at some point, and he was super cool, and he was this monk guy, and he was part of the same church as the character that I was in, and everybody hated him because he was like super like, come on guys, let's go to this next city. Like, he was very clearly there to like keep us in line, and so we kept trying to ditch him at any turn that we could get, because we were like, we want to do our own thing, we don't want to be tied down.
I can see you like trying, like sitting down with Elfarnius, like Oakborn or whatever that elf.
Nah, he was just some random. No, he was some random human monk.
Just like, hey guys, let's all get a drink. Yeah, keep on drinking. Yeah, here's another one on me, Elfarnius. Let's fucking ditch him.
That is basically exactly what happened.
We're gonna set up a zip line, and you're gonna hold up the top here. Oh shit! After we all got through, it got cut. Oh man.
Oh man.
We'll catch up to you. Don't worry, Elfarius.
Like, he ended up, like, the DM gave us a cool hook of like, oh, he ended up like getting kidnapped or like let off somewhere. And we're like, he's probably fine. And then we just keep going because we have more important shit to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one that happens a lot, is DMs have all these cool, like, NPCs that have really interesting to them backstories, and you're like, okay, these guys are gonna love this guy, because I love this character. And then you introduce them as, like, the coolest shit, or, like, the most sympathetic character ever, and the character's like, yeah, I'm not dealing with that shit.
Right, they don't care.
It's, okay, if you really want to think about it like a video game, imagine fucking Fallout 4.
Starlau from fucking Mario
Luigi. It's the Fallout 3 problem.
Fallout 3 and 4.
Like in Fallout 3, where you've got your character's dad, who is the real main character. Uh-oh. You're some random schmuck who's going around the wasteland, and you're just everybody's errand boy. And then you show up, and your dad's like, you've got to help me do this thing that I want to do. And you're like, yeah, but I wanted to do this thing. It's like, no, fuck you, we're doing this.
Or in Fallout 4,
I'm the main character.
When you get introduced to this family in the first 5 minutes, and this child in the first 5 minutes, and then they kill your wife. Spoilers for Fallout 4. They kill your wife and kid.
Your spouse in front of
spouse
you.
Spouse and kid in front of you. And your kid gets kidnapped. And you're somehow supposed to care about this, even though it's happened. You just met them 5 minutes ago?
You can't make your players care about your story. That's what happens almost 90% of the... Like, 90% of the time when I see people say, like, oh, my players broke my script by going completely off the rails, it's because the DM had a super cool idea for a plot and super cool NPCs that get shoved onto the players, and they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, because the players have their own cool stuff that they want to express.
Like, imagine if we introduced, like, Lazarus to the party, like, right off the bat, and had him constantly talking to the party, and constantly, like, telling his sad story, and, like,
And constantly
and
imparting folksy wisdom, and,
yeah,
like, you can't do anything without Lazarus showing up, and, like, an NPC starts talking, and Lazarus is the first person to talk, who goes, like, of course we'll go out and hunt down Michael. That's what we would do. And then you guys are like, no, like, even if it's slightly out of character, the reaction of most people is going to be to rebel against that.
Yeah. Like, think of how little impact the sermon that he gives would have had if we had been, like, forced to be there.
Right. Like, that's the thing, is that when he says, I've been able to account for most scenarios, but when designing any game, video game, or tabletop, players can do stuff that's really unexpected. That's the best part. That's what, when players do unexpected things, it should be your cue to go, I can make something better with this. I can change this into a better story. I can make something more interesting. Because when players do unexpected things, it's because they want to do something. And you as the DM should be facilitating that.
Exactly.
The best and most memorable stories in D&D that I've ever heard are from times when the players go off and do something crazy, and the DM responds with the classic improv, yes and. When they just go, yeah, okay, cool, this is what we're doing now. Awesome.
Yeah, like, maybe I've told this story before, but when I ran that campaign where the players were taking an orb from one place to another in this long procession, and the procession was supposed to basically be like an instantaneous transmission through the power of this magic orb. And they were like, well, we think some freaky stuff's been going on with these orbs. And we think like the magic is maybe fucking with stuff and we don't really understand it. So we're going to try and resist the magic of the orb in this instant transmission. And the instant transmission for me was, I don't want to have the players spend this entire session walking through the goddamn woods to get to this next city. I'm just going to teleport them there because magic.
But for us being in character, we were like, we've seen these things do weird stuff to this forest around us and like things like that. So no, we're going to try and not lose consciousness. We're going to try and stay on and fight against this because we want to make sure we don't get fucked with when we're teleporting.
Now imagine how obnoxious and dumb it would have been if I said, well, you can't, you weren't successful. You just get teleported.
Or you go, come on guys. Like you just like, you know, he pulls the, okay, you guys resist. And you teleport and nothing bad happens.
Yeah. I was about to say worst case scenario. You roll a thing like you roll a, if you're like a no, 20, you like, even, oh, you resist and then you go anyway.
Or whatever. Like he didn't even have it be a roll.
Yeah, yeah.
We as the players didn't know that he didn't plan this.
Yes.
He never let on like, okay, come on, guys, just go with it. Like, you know, nothing bad's going to happen here. He didn't do that. We went, okay, we're going to resist. And he was like, aha, that was smart of you guys, because this was totally going to happen.
Yeah. The simple fact that they mentioned we're going to resist made me go, oh, shit, I have to do something now because I don't want to just teleport them now.
Right, because he had established this whole thing that when you teleport, because one of the players was a high elf who was teleporting through the forest, and when they teleported, it was like this weird inverted forest where everything was fucked up and there was like dark shadow creatures everywhere. And so we went, we don't want to teleport, we don't want to go there, we don't want to go into the nightmare realm. And so he was like, oh, they're going to stay completely conscious while teleporting, so they're going to be moving at like breakneck speed through this forest while all these horrifying nightmare creatures are like crashing up against the protective shield that the orb is giving them, and it turned into this whole big thing. And we didn't know that he didn't plan it.
Yeah, it was like the skills challenge, and like people jumped in and out of this temporal bubble so they'd like speed up and slow down, and I had like these shadow creatures who are now... Finally, I decided they're like, oh, well, if they're moving, the teleporting, yeah, takes you through the nightmare realm, but it also protects you because you're moving really, really fast through it. So by slowing down the teleporting, these nightmare creatures now have time to try and attack you. And so now they're trying to attack them, and there's like tendrils, and it's tearing up the forest, and it's like this whole crazy thing. And that was all off the cuff because they decided to explicitly go against what I had scripted.
Right.
And it ended up being one of the most memorable parts of the game.
Yeah, like, my character as a robot, like, I hooked on to something outside of the, you know, temporal little time sphere, grabbed a thing that was trying to get at us, and then fell back into the orb, having it crash into it. You know, doing all this crazy shit, and all of the characters got to do things that made their characters feel important and powerful as a result of rebelling against what the DM set up. But since the DM set it up in a way that we didn't know that we were breaking the rules, it just continued as this seamless experience.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure some of the new players asked me, like, how did you come up with that? And I was like, I didn't.
Yeah, but like me sitting there, I looked at Michael when we did that, and I went, oh, he didn't have anything planned for this.
No, I had to convert the XP that I had planned on for some combat when they got to the place, into XP for a skills challenge, and then there wasn't combat
of course,
that session.
Coming up with that sort of thing is hard. Like, some people have a lot of trouble improvising, and so it is totally acceptable to say, I didn't have anything planned for this. I don't know what's going to happen here. Give me like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's another thing is you don't have to be like Johnny on the spot to come up with something cool right away. You can definitely tell your players like, okay, give me a minute.
That was something I was about to add. I was going to say, you know, don't be intimidated if you don't think that you're really, really good at improv.
Yeah, because you can take as long as you need. You can go, okay, I don't have anything right now. Take 5 minutes, go get some snacks or something. Go down to the gas station, go get some snacks. By the time you guys come back, I'll know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, I got to take a piss break while I come up with more patent names.
Right, you know?
Because all of my car ones were made useless.
Well, but I think that's another reason to have, like, to have scenarios or little scenes from a hat that you can pull out.
Like, for example, an example of a time that I used scenes from a hat, right? And what I'm talking about with this web of interconnected scenes as opposed to a scripted plot is in that game that we were playing where Tim got introduced, the one where with Guy Humano. The basic 5-minute synopsis was The Amazing Race, but instead of random teams of people, it's teams representing gods, right? It was a big old contest to see who gets to be in the pantheon for the next 1,000 years, because there's always a weird round number of gods in D&D universes, right? And so I was like, huh, I wonder how that happens. And like, Amazing Race, fuck it. And so there were all these, you know, big scenes with the players going to talk to the gods and like form alliances and teammates and blah 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 in this big celestial competition. And every single one of those scenes I had a little script for, right? Like do where is it? Yeah, like give me 1 second.
Give me 5 minutes, I gotta come up with something.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna go take a piss break. Minutes. Maybe run down the store, grab a monster.
No, I just
or something.
I need to find my. Yeah, see right here. I've got all of the gods and their teams listed, and their potential relationship to the party. Like Bahamut, upset about players' presence, disliked how they enter tournaments, wary, but they follow the rules, so they can't be openly mad. Neutral. Coralon loves these guys, thinks they're great, hated people that players took out and glad to see them gone. Obvious friends, approaches party to offer alliance, very honest. You know, all of these things are little scenes of them potentially meeting these people, and the players decide to fuck it all up.
Yeah, we fucked it all up.
They allied with a bunch of evil people, and I'm like, oh shit, what the fuck is going on?
To be fair, it made sense at the time.
It made sense at the time, right? But I didn't write out, okay, so the party is in this celestial amazing race, and these are going to be their teammates, and they're going to meet them here and here and here. I was just like, who do you guys want to go talk to? And I had plans for whoever they talked to, but
The cobalt team.
They did things completely unexpected and threw me for a loop. And I had to come up with shit on the spot.
I think in that game, I literally spent more time trying to get the kobolds to come in second place than trying to get our own team to win.
Yes.
It was
fun and hilarious. But so players can do unexpected stuff, but the secret is that every single negative that people talk about with problem players and with players lashing out and breaking their game is actually a positive. You can always... almost always, unless you literally have a group of players that are just douchebags that are trying to ruin your game, and that's their fun, right? At which point, just don't play with them.
Yeah.
And by actively trying to ruin your game, I mean, like, even if you just go, here is a town, like, you guys all have your characters, and, like, you know, you came up with a reason for all of their characters to be friends, and you know, like you had them all build their characters together and they're all like, they all have a legitimate reason to be there and do things. And like they picked their own hook and it's like, we're all a bunch of town guards and our town got burned down and now we have nowhere to go, but we saw the person who did it and we all want revenge. Right. And then they have that hook and you go, okay, here's a new town. People might have information. And they go, I'm going to go burn down the tavern. Then, yeah, it's going to be hard to make that game work. You still could, but you probably just have some douchebags on your hands.
Yeah, like, it's hard to... When I think of something that, like, quote-unquote breaks script, I think of something that is just totally outside the realm of what's reasonable for a character to do. Like, if
that's disruptive or disgusting to the point of just clearly being an attention grab.
Yeah, like if your characters walk into town and they're supposed to be they've said that they're a good party and the fighter just stabs some dude, like
just and then just like seals them, like, it looked easy to kill.
They were weak or something like that.
Why did you kill them, Malphesius? To test my power.
I mean, even then, you can turn that into a thing by having their actions have consequences, because it's like, oh, all of a sudden, like, now there's some, like, well, like, some notorious bandit group, and now other bandits are like, hey, we saw you, I like your moxie, kid, you wanna be crazy bandits? And then those players might be, yeah! Or it might be like, we're gonna kill these bandits and become bandit lords, and now you're playing bandit lord game, and I wanna play bandit lord game, that sounds fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious when someone is just being a douche to be a douche, and when someone is just like, I'd rather be doing something else.
Right. But most of the time when I see people going like, oh, they broke my script, you could just turn it into a better script.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that pretty much covers it. So let's cover the last question, which is ZT Mackin. My question is, how are the cars still working if gas goes bad in a few weeks, months? And the answer is magic.
This is a completely different question. I wasn't expecting you to go for this. Yes, this was from somebody. The answer is, this is completely unrelated to the fucking DM thing, but the answer is, I thought about this, and the answer is alchemy. Very easy. This is an easy fix.
It's magic.
Well, you're like, oh, gas doesn't work? Okay, these people can make material out of any form of magical material. The second you go through the portal, you find cars. You go, huh, there's something in them. It smells weird. What is this shit? Oh, it's gasoline. We found it written in a book. Can we make gasoline? Yes. You combine this amount of magical materials in this way, and oh, look, it might have taken us a year or two, but here's the alchemical formula to make gasoline. Because you can have, there's alchemical formulas to turn water into alcohol and whatever the fuck, so you can totally turn shit into gas.
And they had the whole college was set up there too, and you had a bunch of smarty pants elves going in there working on stuff like
also,
this.
Also, you can just look up a book, you can just pick out a book that goes like, hey, here's how gasoline's made.
Well, they'd have to get like refined oil and shit, and I don't know if
yeah, but then you could just make diesel. You can make diesel easy as shit.
Diesel goes bad too.
Yeah, but you can make new diesel easily.
That's true.
Okay,
there's biodiesel and stuff.
Dwarves mined oil in the old D&D world, so whatever. Whatever they used oil for before.
My answer was magic, and I thought that was a better answer.
Yeah.
Your answers are dumb.
Fuck you.
But, so that kind of launches back into the main question of how do you write things? And... the last thing that I'll give...
the answer is, how do you write things? Magic, you don't have to.
Haha, got him.
Make dwarves do it.
We actually have a book here that writes itself.
But, so, I think a mistake that a lot of people make when they try and write worlds is they write them from the top down. They have their grand idea of what they want to have happen. They have their big bad evil guy, they have their hook, they have their plot, they have their big climactic finale that they want to have happen, right? But the path to that ends up getting all weird and fucky, and the players go off and do weird things, and then they go, I can't get this to work again. Like, I wanted my players to go fight this big lich, but now they're on the other side of the planet and they would have no idea that this lich exists. Crap. What do I do? My game's falling apart. And my answer to that sort of thing is build from the bottom up. Come up with an interesting world and characters, and then come up with motivations, and you'll get caught off guard a lot less. Come up with the framework first, and then see what interesting stories come up as a result. You know, instead of going like, there's a king in a city and he's doing XYZ, try and come up with a city and then think about who would be the guy who runs this? What would he be doing? And you'll probably find better answers.
Yeah, I think it's always best to write the background or the setting as a background as opposed to the foreground. It should be the place where things take place in, not the things that take place themselves.
Now, this does lead to the concept of open world games versus linear games, which we can talk about in more depth in a different podcast, you know, maybe in the next one. But for both of those, for both open world games where you just put the players in the world and you go, do a thing. And then they go, we're going to go do this. And you go, good job. And for linear games where you go, where you give the players a prompt and you go, like, you guys are all on a boat. You've been drafted to go fight a lich on this place. Come to the session with characters that got drafted to go fight this lich and tell me why they want to go fight this lich, right?
Yeah.
Both are completely valid, but I find that for both of those games, you're better off coming up with the setting as the backdrop, building from the ground up, starting from a premise and building from there, and building on top of it, rather than coming up with, there's a lich who is doing things, who is big and evil. Well, why is he big and evil? Well, because somebody killed his wife. Well, why did somebody kill his wife? Because she was a witch. And build down, 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 down. You start at the bottom where you go, what's the base premise of this world? Build up from there. Why is, you know, who is this world inhabited by? Build up from there. Like, what's something that's going wrong in this world? Maybe there's a lich. Well, then why is there a lich? And then you build up, 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 up. Right?
Yeah, because that allows you to place your players in a section of the world that's still being built. And it allows the players to shape the world around themselves.
Right. It allows you to take ideas from the players. You know, you can shamelessly steal ideas from that the players give to you because you don't have to have everything already built. You can put them on a boat and not know where they're going.
Yeah, I had an entire session where I let the players design the town themselves. And I think we talked about it before, but it wasn't just me saying, oh shit, I didn't have this town designed. It was, I want you guys to design this town so that later, maybe they didn't realize it, but later when this place gets attacked, they'll be like, oh, I actually care about this place because I helped build it.
Yeah, no, I knew that's where you were going with that shit.
Yeah, but we were playing with, like, we were playing with two new people, so it was...
Yeah, with two completely new players, but that's... I find that no matter what sort of game you're building, it is easier to slot players in, and it's easier to have those players' backstories, motivations, and character shine through and matter if you don't have everything already decided.
Yes.
It's better to come to attack it as a collaborative story-building situation, where players' reactions and the way that they do things are capable and expected to completely change the story.
Yeah, because otherwise, what's the point of having players if they can't affect the story?
Right.
Why are they playing?
You know, write the story as you're going. You can have your scenes and you can have your big overarching plot, but you got to be ready to change it if it's no longer suiting the needs of the game.
Yeah, like, I mean, the difficulty in a video game comes from mechanics and strategy. Like, the game has an ending. And it's going to happen. Sometimes there's multiple endings. But for argument's sake, the game has an ending and you're going to get there if you play it well. D&D doesn't have to be that way. You could change the ending. It can be however you want it. if the ending's already decided and the players don't have any effect on it, if you already know that they're going to get to the big bad evil guy, and you already know that they're going to beat him or just die and the game will be over, then what's the point? You know?
Yeah, like, to me, that isn't very fun.
Yeah.
Some people like that sort of game, but for me, I don't. It doesn't feel very fun to me.
If I don't know that I, as a player, can make changes to the world or do things that will have an effect on the world at large, or fail and succeed based on my own merits and my own role playing and my own character ideas, then I don't want to be a part of that world.
Yeah, and the big little cheat here is that you can still have your plot. You just have to adapt it around what the players do in a way that at least, at the bare minimum, gives the players the illusion that what they did caused these events to occur.
Yeah.
You can still have the same events happen, but the reasoning has to be different. The reasoning has to be, now it's because of what the players did.
Yeah.
Right? And in a believable way. Right? Like, if you want the Lich to end up killing a bunch of people, and your original plan was the players are going to enter this dungeon and they are going to pick up this gem that, unbeknownst to them, is going to cause the Lich to become super powerful, right? What happens if they go into the dungeon, they see the gem, they go, "That looks dangerous. Let's not touch it."
Turns out they were supposed to touch it.
Oh no, yeah. It turns out, like, you don't let on to it, but it turns out, like, oh, that was one of the Lich's phylacteries. And by leaving it where it was, it completed a ritual where it powered up and then it teleports away because you guys didn't get to it in time. And the players go, oh shit, we fucked up. But the same thing happened either way, right? But and in a way, that's writing the story, but you have to... You have to be able to adapt your story around what the players do. And ideally, you know, if you're really not comfortable with coming up with new ideas on the fly, then sure, you can have the same event happen no matter what. But ideally, I think you'll find that your stories will get a lot better if you make those choices actually matter in a consistent way.
Yes.
That you allow the players' choices, ideas, and characters to change your story.
Yes, I agree.
Like, because he has this, Dino has this whole story written out, right?
Yeah.
In this thing, and sure, it's good. Like, it's a good book. But I can see so many problems with, what happens if the players don't want to do this? What happens if the players want to go do something completely different, and then it falls apart? It doesn't have anything anymore. Unless you change it around the concept that the players aren't in a book, the players aren't in my story and they're going to stick to it, the players are in their own story and I'm building them their story, then you can make something really great. So I think that'll do it for right now.
And so if the listeners, the eagle-eyed listeners here, want to hear more about D&D, what might they, what course of action might they take there?
Oh, what, you mean listener revival, you bastards?
Yeah.
Did you mean revival, or do you mean revival of Dungeons & Dragons Real Play Podcast?
Oh shit, are they different?
Yep, one of them's copyrighted. They're not copyrighted.
Oh no. Oh, we're gonna get our pantsuit off. I'm not even wearing them. I'm already not wearing them. What'll happen?
Dude, I never wear pants when we record Revival.
Yeah, no.
I make it a point. If you listen very, very closely, you can actually hear a zip as I take my pants off in every episode of Revival. Dan never notices.
Wait, in Revival or Revival of Dungeons & Dragons Real Play Podcast? Now you're the one getting sued!
Shit, we gotta cut the podcast before they listen to it on iTunes, YouTubes, Google Play, or the website, lmtya.com. Cut the feed!
Cut the feed!